All right, good afternoon, everybody. How's everybody doing so far? All right. Come on, I can hear a little bit more enthusiasm than that. All right, see, we're here to talk about cost analysis. So you know this is a very exciting topic for many of us, including us recovering accountants such as myself. My name's Audra Murata. I am the Chief Financial Officer of Mother Earth Brewing in Kinston, North Carolina. So I deal with numbers every single day, and I love it, and I wouldn't want it any other way. I'm also a home brewer, and I also am the treasurer of the Weaver Street Market Cooperative's Board of Directors. So I work a lot with local food as well as local beer. It is my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome these three gentlemen to our panel today, David Logsdon, Ben Havoc, and Tom Mensch. David Logsdon began his career in the craft brewing industry in 1985 at his Oregon laboratory growing yeast for many of the new breweries opening at that time. He went on to form Y-Yeast Labs that became the source of yeast for craft brewers around the world. Soon after that, Dave became a founding partner and brewer at Full Sail Brewing Company. Years later, after leaving both of those successful ventures behind, David opened Logsdon Farmhouse Ales on his farm in Hood River County. There, he and his partners produce traditional organic farmhouse ales with local and farm-sourced products. Ben Havoc started his brewing career in 1995 at Minnesota Brewing Company in St. Paul, Minnesota, before working for the Rock Bottom Breweries for the next 16 years. He was brewmaster at the Bethesda, Maryland, and Portland, Oregon Rock Bottoms, as well as current board member and past president of the Oregon Brewers Guild. In 2011, he won the Inga Russell Best Paper Award from the Master Brewers Association of the Americas. He and business partner Ben Love recently started Gigantic Brewing Company in Portland, Oregon. Tom Mensch is a seventh-generation Floridian that started homebrewing at age 18 when he realized he was not old enough to buy beer, but old enough to buy the ingredients to make it. Born with a passion for great beer, he spent his decades carving a trail for craft beer in Florida's difficult market. His first foray into the beer business was a draft-to-go device called the Carbonator and a small oxygenation kit for the home brewer. He later went on to be one of Ralph's angels for Hop Union, an experience that created many opportunities. In 2002, Tom opened a small craft distribution company. Floridians were not quick to embrace the craft segment, but over time, interest caught on in the South, and the company was not able to keep up with the growing demand. Tom sold the distribution company to the Coors Miller Network in 2009 and decided to give more focus to his own beers. He started contract brewing Orange Blossom Pilsner in 2003 and has brewed two more beers to date. Tom's plan has been to first build the brand to justify building a brewery. In 2010, Tom joined the University of Central Florida Business Incubator Program, where he receives consulting and assistance with the business aspects of his plan. He plans to have the brewery up and running by mid-2013. So I'm going to have each of the gentlemen tell their own stories in their own words, talk about their business models, which are very three distinctly different models from the startup perspective. We'll learn a little bit more about the cost side of it, and then we'll go into a Q&A section. So we'll start with David.
Thank you.
You want to flip the slides?
Oh, sure. You
ready? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Audra. I just wanted to mention that I really appreciated Audra's participation here on our panel, because we put this little program together thinking that we would be able to give a nice broad perspective to startups, different types that we're all doing, and having Audra's experience and background, it seemed very fitting and appropriate, and it's a real nice benefit to have her here on the stage with us today. So I really appreciate her being here, and I hope you do as well. Thank you. So, out there, how many of you have active breweries running right now? Pretty good number. And then I guess the rest of you have breweries in planning? Is there breweries in planning here? A few? Yeah, great, great. Well, as Audra mentioned, I started my third business now with a new little brewery, and I'll talk a little bit about how we go about our organization and how we're structured. But the three of us were going to talk basically about brewery purchase price. As you know, there's a lot of different brewery sizes, configurations, new and used out there, something to consider. Bottling line cost, if that's something that you're going to be considering as well. The option of contract brewing like Tom is doing is another factor. The kegging options, I think we have a little bit of information on that, but maybe a little bit weak in that area. The cash requirements to put all this together as well. The real estate and overhead it takes to put a brewery on the ground and in the building. The purchase or lease or monthly rent costs that are going to be associated with the brewery cost. Insurance, utilities, and licensing and related fees as well. Thanks. So what's your beer worth? What is it going to be on the shelf? You know, I walk up and down the beer stores and the grocery stores and the beer aisles, and I look at all the different prices and the sizes that are available, and whether they're IPAs or lagers or Belgian ales. And, boy, you see a lot of different prices out there, that's for sure. There's a pretty big range. And knowing what it costs to produce that is very important, obviously. We've got to sell beer for a profit. You got to make a living doing it. So knowing what that cost is very important. And knowing where the break-even point to get started is, so you know what your cash flow is going to be and how many kegs or bottles you need to produce in order to operate. We'll talk about that. And how long is it going to take you to get there to reach that point where you're out of the red and into the black? So like I mentioned, there's lots of prices, a lot of price points out there in the market. What will your market bear? If you know what your cost is going to be to produce a beer, how much can you sell it for? Where is that profit margin at? And we're going to talk about price to the wholesaler, price to the retailer, and suggested price to the consumer. And I think we've got some on-premise and off-premise pricing as well. So that's me on top. There's our little brewery. It kind of got tall and skinny, and when we put the picture into the slide for some reason, so it's actually, we're much fatter than that. But this is a little 15-barrel brew house you can see on the left side over there. It's a used piece of equipment that we purchased that was needed a little bit of work, we hammered that out. Now it's all part of our startup costs as well. And our bottling hall is on the right side, and we got a little warehouse area on the far right. So you can see by design of the building, we are small. And that's the way we designed our brewery. We didn't plan to turn into another full sale. That's something that I think we have a model for with the size we are, the types of product we make, and how much we can grow within the bounds that we have. So we've been brewing since February 2011, so we released our beer just a little over a year ago. The brewery operates as a cooperative. We're a LLC as we're registered with the state. There's six members in our co-op. Three of us work pretty much full-time. The other three help in various ways and are not really a paid position. In fact, we don't have any employees. We're set up as a cooperative, so we all participate within the membership of the cooperative. We're a certified organic brewery. Everything we produce is organic. The reason we went with that was because we felt that the ingredients were good, that we could resource to make as good of beers as we possibly can. And we liked working farm to farm. For example, we use only whole cone hops in our brewery. It's a lot more work, as some of you probably realize. They're harder to get. Organic hops are harder to get. You're limited by your sources as well as how many varieties you can get. So that there was a lot of limitations, but at the same time, we buy from another farmer. We buy from that farm, that hop farm, we bring it over to our farm, and that's, and we grow some of our own hops, and we have a program to start producing sour cherry trees on our farm. We've got sour Sarbixi trees brought over from Belgium in quarantine now that we're getting ready to do some grafting and put out a few acres of that so we can use those sour cherries off our farm in our beers as well. So everything's kind of local, central, and when we get done brewing our batch of beer, the grains go up on our pasture to our Scottish Highland cattle, and they eat the grain there, supply a little fertilizer for our hops, and the circle goes around. We primarily package in 750-ml bottles. That was our design, and that's where we went out with. We do a small amount of draft beer, and this is something that we didn't really plan to do, but we knew we were going to do a little bit because there's events that only take draft beer, for example, the Fresh Hop Festivals and some of the other events we go to. So we were kegging up a little bit of beer just for that. And then we've got a very good client base in Portland, Oregon, in particular, which is about an hour west of us, that the beer bars there love draft beer. And I think probably like myself and a lot of you, when I go into a bar, I like to see what's on tap before I start to look at a bottle selection. And so we're only in bottles for the most part. So getting a little bit of draft out is a big benefit. It helps drive bottle sales. And so we realize that, and we're increasing a little bit more of our draft in order to do that as well. So for Logsdon Farmhouse Ales, we had a $325,000 of cash and in-kind. And the in-kind, or sweat equity, was the work my partner and I did to get the barn ready to be a brewery. Refurbishing equipment, the bottling line, for example, it's a used 12-head filler, crowner, and labeler, and we have an air sparger and a rinser on that as well. $40,000 is pretty dirt cheap. The cost new would be around $250,000, thereabouts. So we spent a lot of time and about $10,000 rebuilding that machine, but now it runs like a new machine, and it works very efficiently. So where we didn't have cash, we had time, and we had the time to work on it and learn the machine. So now we know it up and down as well. We know how that machine operates, and that's a good thing, because even if you buy new equipment, it's going to need service and repair and maintenance as well. So that $50,000 that we have for startup expenses and retooling, that was part of that on the brewery and the miscellaneous pieces that we had to put together. A little bit on licensing and legal fees, and with operating cash of $150,000 after that. So we have pretty reasonable rents compared to a lot of breweries that are starting up, and depending on where you're at. It's on my farm. So it's we charge $1,000 rent, and that also covers the rent for the brewery as well, so because I own the brewery myself. Utilities are relatively moderate at $1,000. Insurance, not too high. Accounting and legal are pretty minimal because we take care of most of our own bookwork. Organic certification costs a little bit. And distributions, that's the big cost right there. That was something that we worked into the formula because one of my partners had to have a salary. We wanted to go to work full-time when we got operating license to go. So that distributions or labor is three salaries a month that we're paying ourselves. So that's automatically into it, and then later on I'll show you it's a part of the fixed cost that we have. So $13,000 a month or $163,000 a year in annual expenses that way. So for our variable cost, and this is for 300 barrels, you can see on top, this was our first year of annual production. $13,000 on malt fermentables, that includes growing my own yeast, and we also use pear juice for re-fermentation in the bottle and our kegs, and that's all part of that. Hops, we pay a premium for organic hops, but even though we don't make IPAs, there's still a pretty good expense on that. Bottles are a big expense, and labels and the packaging to put that together. Repairs and maintenance, again, with used equipment, I don't think, no matter if you knew or used, you have ongoing needs, new valves to put in, new miscellaneous things that you're always going to have a little bit of an expense for as well. We do a little bit of advertising and marketing, and I'm just surprised it's that high, but I don't know where it all came from and where it all went to, but hopefully it's doing some good for us. And so for that 300 barrels to produce that first year was $56,000 in ingredients or $4,600 in variable cost to do that. Yep. So with a fixed cost of $163,000, variable cost of $56,000, we had a total of $219,000 to produce 300 barrels our first year. So that per barrel cost is $731, and that's if we would have yielded 300 barrels. We did not, and I'll get into that in just a minute, so go ahead. So our pricing structure for what we're selling, we're putting this beer together. It's a pretty expensive beer to make based on those numbers. Our price to wholesalers is $60 a case. We just started wholesaling in California in the last couple months. We do our own distribution in Oregon. That's one of our three partners. One works as our distribution agent is based in Portland and takes care of all the state of Oregon. So that price, we get $84 a case. That's our basic selling price right now. Then our suggested retail price for our product is $10 a bottle. And we see that's a pretty standard markup, I think, if you find through the industry, wholesaler to retailer to the consumer. However, we're finding already that the product is in fairly good demand and retailers are charging not 10, but 11, and sometimes $12 a bottle. If we sell it on premise, I've seen it as high as 20 a bottle for buying it in a restaurant and having it with your dinner. So they're making some pretty good margins on that, too. They've got their expenses. They're going to sell it for what they can sell it for, too. So for our draft beer, the little bit that we do, we have a few half barrels. We sell this to the pub at $3.30 a half barrel. We're probably the most expensive beer in Portland outside of maybe some imports, where most of them are probably quite a bit less than that. What we plan to do for the most part is, if we can expand our draft, is go in 1/6 barrels, and we're currently shipping those to California at $85 and selling them in Oregon at $115 direct to the retailer. So with that $219,000 in cost we had our first year, as I mentioned, we had a realistic yield of 67%. That bottling line sucked a lot of beer and went down a drain. Little things, dumped a few batches along the way. I think that's probably pretty typical startup. So with that 67% yield, our cost per barrel was actually $1,091 when the end of the year was all said and done. And at self-distribution, as I mentioned, what we were doing for the most part at $84 a case, 13 cases to a barrel. We were selling it for $1,092 a barrel. So we made $1 a barrel. Pretty damn good. We were happy. We were in the black. Okay, go ahead. So first year's production, 300 barrels. As I mentioned, $1,091 for cost, $1,092 sold. And on our draft, even though we were selling it at $3.30 a half barrel or $6.60 a barrel, we lost quite a bit of money on every bit of draft beer that we sold that first year. But that's part of startup, and I think that's something I think it's kind of key in at least my part of the presentation is there's a lot of costs associated with startup. Make sure if you think you have your cash where you think you need it, you might want to double it because you're not going to hit on all cylinders very likely going into your first year, and there's going to be a lot of things. Are the sales going to be what you expect them to be, for example? And there's a lot of things involved. Make sure you got plenty of deep pockets to keep yourself going through this first rough year. So the final slide I have here, things look a little better, and I'm glad to say that because otherwise I might not be here next year. We intend to do about 1,000 barrels this year. We're on track to do close to that. And since our fixed costs are there, and we're dealing just pretty much with variable cost after that, even once we get up to 1,000 barrels, our per barrel cost is down all the way to about $270 to $320 is what we expect. If we get to 2,000 barrels, it would be a $185 to $235. And when we get to 3,000 barrels, which is going to be about where the limit is for our facility, we should be down in the 160 to the 210 range. And that's what we expect to get ourselves down to. And I feel pretty confident with that, that we can do this with the model that we have. And we just have to make very good beer. We ask a premium for our product. Our customers expect good beer. And so far, we've had great reception for our beer, and that's been a good start. And so we're kind of in a little bit of a niche, I guess, with the styles that we make, although there are many there like that. We're not competing in the IPA market or the 12-ounce bottle selling for $6 or $8 a six-pack. We couldn't do that. And so with the model we have, this is what we can do, and we're looking forward to the next couple of years and maybe make some money. Thank you.
Me. I'll stand too. It's exciting. I don't think I wrote that line up there. It's really smart-assy, isn't it? It's typical for me. We're a gigantic brewing company. It's me and a guy from another brewery started this thing. We're just a little production facility in an industrial area. We're both brewers. We didn't want to have a restaurant. We didn't want to have to deal with the kitchen and labor and all that sort of stuff. I mean, if you really want to get into cost analysis and kitchens, yikes, total nightmare. Actually, I don't want to forget to say this, so let me say this right now. So those of you who may have come from food service or kitchens or any other businesses, a lot of people really love to talk about cost of goods percentages. I think this is an absolute waste of time in the brewing world, 100% waste of time. Because if you look at something like a kitchen where you're serving, burgers and fries and steaks and lasagna and whatever, you have a lot of people eating a lot of different items, and you get your cost of goods percentage. If you don't know what that is, it's basically your sales divided by the loss of your inventory. Okay, those cost of goods items kind of even out, and it's a way to look at how much crap is being thrown out in your kitchen. Okay. How many times in your brewery do you look at that bag of black malt that's been open for 2 weeks and go, man, that bag of black malt's been open for 2 weeks. I should just throw it out. As if it's like a case of tomatoes, right? I mean, our businesses don't work that way. You want to know if your brewery's working well? Calculate your brewhouse efficiency every time you make a batch of beer and keep your brewhouse efficiency high. Calculate your brewhouse yield and keep your yield high, right? Cost of goods is a waste of time. We're brewers. It's a brewery, okay? Act like one. So anyway, we just started. We've been working on this project for a little over a year. We just started brewing in April. What the hell am I doing here? I don't really know. But our gig is this. We're going to make one beer year-round, an IPA. Everything else after that is seasonal specialty. Everyone who saw Paul Gatza talk last year, you can see the top two sales points in craft beer are IPA and seasonal specialty. Why bother to make anything else, right? I'm totally serious. Primary package is a 22-ounce bottle. Why? Because that's how people buy IPA and seasonal specialty. They go to the grocery store. They see the big lineup of beers. They say, IPA, and hey, what's new? I'll take one of those. I don't know what it is, right? So you cater to the market. You have to be smart about these things. And we're really aiming at 75% of our production in bottle. And then draft is in 50-liter kegs. Okay, 50-liter kegs are kind of hard to get. But if you can get them, they're awesome because your average bar owner just looks at it like a keg. So you sell them. So let's say your average price for a keg in your area is $120. Turns out you can probably sell a 50-liter for $120. Huh. Just letting you know, a little secret. Works out great. Good. Going to be honest. So we started out with about $630,000. We financed with basically... my partner and I just kind of talked to everybody we knew. It's a lot of, we're not rich kids. It's a lot of $10,000 and $20,000 investments from people who got sick of the stock market and invested with us. We bought a brand new brewery. Why did we do that? Because all of you are starting breweries. So I don't know if you know this, but used equipment is like 85 to 90 cents on the dollar right now. And it gets sold in like 47 seconds. So we knew that it was going to be a significant cost. We'd both been brewers for a long time. We decided to go with a local manufacturer that does all custom equipment because we plan on building one brewery for the rest of our lives and being done with it. So we wanted to get what we wanted to get. $250,000. Now that's brew house, heat exchanger, fermenters. That's just about every, I mean, that's the mill, auger. I mean, that's the whole package. I think that includes the cooler, includes the glycol chiller. I mean, it's the whole package. I think it includes kegs. Bottling line. We do not have a bottling line. So how are you going to bottle? We're really fortunate. We're in Portland, Oregon, and there are two mobile bottling companies. If you can't get your brewery off the ground, start a mobile bottling company. Not kidding. The thing is, bottling lines are expensive. They're really expensive. And whereas $630,000 is an enormous amount of money to me, it's not a lot of money. I'm totally amazed that Dave can start a brewery for under $500,000. I just can't even believe it. Your average small bottling line, that's like $75,000 between the bottle, the package table, the labeler, $75,000. If I can use someone else, even though I'm paying through the nose for this, it helps my cash flow position out enormously. So, paying ourselves and building the place cost over $200,000. That was about $50,000 or $60,000 more than we thought it was going to cost. Everyone says this, but I need to explain it a little bit. Everyone always says, you know, it'll take you twice as long. Bullshit. It will not take you twice as long. You need to be very organized. You will have delays. What kills you is the nickel and diming 1 or 2 day delays that pile up on each other. So you try to minimize those. Schedule your trades really well. But the costs, man, it's always a guesstimate. Just wait till you talk to an electrician, and then you'll see what I mean. Learn how to be a plumber. If you cannot do plumbing, you should not be doing this. Okay? Plumbers are $80 an hour, and you can do it yourself. Licensing and legal fees was $30,000 for us. It was an enormous amount of money. Why? Because we're not rich kids. We had 23 members in our LLC. That number starts to rack up really, really fast as your lawyer starts to write admissions agreements for a lot of people. So when you hear people say, keep the number of investors small, it's legal fees. It just costs you money. I mean, my brother is a member in my LLC, and he doesn't even pay my legal fees. It's ridiculous. We got about $135,000 in operating cash. Next slide. We're lucky. We got a 5,600 square foot industrial space. The rent is enormous. It's 40 cents a square. It's 40 cents a square. It's a 1948 built building that the landlord reskinned, put in FRP and drywall, and insulated for us. We didn't pay anything for it. We have the greatest landlords in the world. Utilities are about $1,350 a month. Insurance isn't that bad, $435. We're going to be doing a little bit of self-distribution and picking up malt and running supplies and stuff. So because I'm a sports car dork and only have tiny cars and Ben doesn't have a large car, we actually had to buy a vehicle. So we just threw that in there. We're paying about $750 a month. That's cost of a truck, the insurance on it, and gas. Labor for us is we had to pay ourselves again. So our total monthly overhead expenses are... When I wrote this out, I was just like, Jesus, we're spending that much money? Nearly $16,000, and our annual fixed costs are a shocking $190,000 a year. I'm totally screwed. Next. We should do about 1,000 barrels a year. I know we just started brewing, but in our absolute ridiculousness in starting this brewery, we had distribution agreements in Alaska, British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon before we made beer. So we've got a bit of demand for what we're going to do. Raw materials are estimating at nearly $70,000. And here's the shocking thing. The bottling costs, because we're working with a mobile bottler. And so they supply the glass as what you have to buy labels. But they supply glass and a little bit of labor. We're actually paying more for bottles and bottling than we are for our raw materials, which is kind of crazy. But again, from a cash flow point, I know that $70,000 is really, really close to $75,000 that a bottler and labeler cost. But that's spread out over time. So the cash flow is much better for me. If I dropped $70,000 now and I had $135,000, there's no way I would make it, right? Repairs and maintenance, about $6,000 over the year. We bought new stuff. It should be fine. We have an enormous marketing budget of $30,000 that has nothing to do with taking out ads or anything like that. That's me and Ben flying around acting like prima donnas is pretty much what that is. Little secret here. I don't know if anybody knows this. In this business, you don't actually sell beer. I don't know if you know that. What you sell is you sell a relationship between your drinker and yourself. That's what you sell. If you can sell that, they'll come back. People like craft because they believe in us, right? Sell the belief. Don't sell the beer, right? So it's important for people to know you. And our total variable costs are a terrifying $175,000. Yikes. So yeah, our fixed and variable, look at this. We spend $1,000 a day. I'm here in San Diego spending $1,000 right now. It's awesome. Yeah, so $365 a barrel is what our guesstimate is. Go ahead. We're doing 22-ounce bottles with like a tiered pricing system. So we're doing what we're calling an A and B price. The A price is essentially $250 a bottle, $30 a case to the wholesaler. That'll be about 3.25 bottle to the retailer. It should hit the store shelves at about $5. Okay? That's a little bit more expensive than your average Oregon 22, which tends to be about $4. In a couple years, I really want to give a talk called Smoking the Bandit Meets Torstein Veblen, how limiting supply creates demand. Anyway. By not making a lot, you know, you charge a little bit more and it's all, it works out. I'm an ex-economist. It's called elasticity of demand. Anyway, and then we have a B price, which is, you know, higher alcohol, aged, you know, a little bit more going on there. And so that's $4 a bottle to the wholesaler, about a little over $5 to the retailer, and about an $8 price point. We expect to be probably moving about 70% of our bottles at price A and about 30% of price B. Draft beer. Same thing, two tiers, but 50-liter kegs. The $97 is, that's pretty normal for what you're getting for a keg to a distributor in Oregon. That's pretty normal. Buck 12 is a little bit on the expensive side, but not crazy. And mind you, those are for 50-liter kegs. So you do the math, and it turns out that $124, it's somewhere around the low 140s equivalent revenue per gallon, shall we say, to a half liter. But those are not prices that anyone balks at. We're also fortunate in Oregon that you're only allowed to charge one price for beer no matter where it goes. So in your cost analysis, when you really do this in your area, you really have to take your state laws into account, particularly as far as distribution, because there are a lot of states, I know Colorado's like this, where I can roll into a bar and I can say, hey, look, man, if you buy 3 kegs, I'll charge you for 2 of them. And then I can go to the bar next door and I can say, look, man, I only have 2 kegs left on the truck. You want them? I'm going to charge you like $180 for both. And I can do that legally in Colorado, but not in Oregon. And frankly, it's awesome that we are like that in Oregon. It keeps the playing field very level. But it's something to think about. So know your local laws. It's terribly important. Total cost per barrel, like $365. Revenue per barrel at bottle price A, it's like $450 a barrel. It's pretty good. Bottle price B, it's like $720 a barrel. That's pretty good, too. Draft price A, look at that. Check it out. $228 a barrel at that price. It's not really good. We're losing money. Just like Dave said, we're losing money. I talked to a distributor one time. This was years ago. His family been it for forever. And he said, you know, my dad always said, you know, you sell draft for pride and you sell bottles for profit. You know, you can make money on draft, but you have to get bigger. That's just the rules. And, you know, look left, look right, look behind you and look in front of you. It's a lot of people starting breweries. And so, there's some places in Oregon where it seems like everybody's putting in a 50-barrel system. And I personally can't. By the way, I should have said, we're like a 15-barrel system with 45-barrel fermenters. We never really plan on getting bigger than 4,000 barrels a year. We want to be able to tell people that when I say that I'm the master brewer and Ben's the brewmaster, that we actually make the beer because we actually do. Right? I think there's an important honesty there. But you need to aim at a profitability equation that will get you there when you're small. We're not all going to be doing 25,000 barrels a year.
you know? So there you go. Bottles generate profit. Draft is an advertising expense. I think I got one more slide, maybe. Yeah. And so then this is sort of like an analysis of what's, as we grow, 5,000, I really never want to make 5,000 barrels of beer. But you'll notice that, and I took into account as we got larger, I took into account added labor, because obviously there's going to be added labor, assistant brewers, pay them a decent wage, they're good people, they need to learn the trade. But you'll notice that, I don't know, somewhere when you get to like 3,000 or 4,000 barrels, at least with our model, your costs aren't dropping that much anymore. Mainly, you know, your costs aren't really going to drop until you increase your brew house size. That's all there is to it, you know. But those costs aren't that bad. At those costs, I actually make money on draft, provided I'm selling, you know, the more expensive stuff. Yeah, it's draft is a tough game. Plus, you got to fight for handles. I mean, you got to fight for everything. But you can get more revenue in bottle, for sure, for sure. So, something to think about. Anyway.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tom. I come from a pretty tough craft market, Florida. I've been beating that drum for over 20 years, been coming out to the CBC for nearly 20 years, and trying to carry back my vision and spread the word, and man, they've been slow to get it. It's slowly coming around, though. We're making some way. I found my niche to be this delicate little honey beer I make called Orange Blossom Pilsner, made with orange blossom honey. Target customers, the Bud Miller Coors drinker. We've got a ton of those. They're gotten to be a pretty easy mark, that's for sure. My model has been to have contract brew, build my brand, build my distribution network, my fan base, to the point where it made sense to have a brick-and-mortar brewery. And I've been doing this for 6 years. I feel like I'm a couple years behind getting my brewery open, but I'm hitting it hard. I find that my acumen is far more in the brewing side. Fortunately, I joined the UCF Business Incubator last year, and they've been helping me tremendously. I've got a team of MBAs working with me to put together a plan and raise the capital and get this brewery up and running. What I've got here for you is kind of a brief overview of what I plan to do with my brewery. Oh gosh, that's what I just said. Sorry about that. So we're looking at 520 to start, startup capital. We're going to buy a brand new 30-barrel brew house, looking at about $475,000. Actually, misspoke. We want to do a lease because that minimizes some of my investors' downside. They don't have to co-sign on that loan. If it were a loan, they'd have to attach their name to that as well, being an owner. And, of course, everybody's going to Cannes. Works great for Florida, beaches, golf courses, pools, you know the gig. Cannon Line's about $100,000 too. We plan to do a capital lease on those, so when we pay it off, we actually own it. So it's much like a loan, only structured different. So the total investment I'm looking at is in the $1.1 million range. I'm currently doing about 2,500 barrels a year, and that's as a contract brew. And that justifies a brick-and-mortar brewery, if you ask me. So we're I expect that when I have my own brewery, we'll be able to quickly double right up to 5,500-ish barrels. So here's our bills. This is my proposed bills. I found a space that's 10,000 square feet. The lot of distressed property out there in the world right now. I think everybody knows that. So I've got a very motivated landlord. The conditions are ripe for negotiating there. They're contributing a ton to the build out as well. I'm very happy with that. Looking at about $41,000 for our monthly expenses. I expect that to, you know, waffle up to 50. I haven't put in a lot of the variable expenses here, although I think we all know the variables are going to give us some surprises. But like I said, this is just kind of a brief overview of my overall plan. This would have been 90 slides if I would have put everything in here. So here's a breakdown on our beer. You can see the gross profit, $7.97. It's a lot of work to get to that point, though, that's for sure. And here's our breakdown on 6 barrels. You can see that we, of course, have your standard keg rentals, keg collars, liquid costs. The indirect costs are not indirect. Those are direct costs, by the way, leaving us a profit margin of about $15 per slim. And here's our half barrel. Very similar. But I think we're going to find a great value in focusing on 6 packs of cans. Our target's 5,400 barrels at the end of the year. I think it's going to be easy to double our sales from what we've been doing, you know, from contract brewing our honey beer in South Carolina to moving to Florida and actually being a local brew. I'm kind of a one-man show doing what I do, and I've got it all set up to where I'll have an actual sales rep and all the stuff I'm supposed to have. So a lot of people are amazed at what I've been able to do alone with this brand. And if I have the proper infrastructure in place, I really think the sky's the limit for us. Florida is just a ripe open market, just waiting. We've got a few good breweries open up here recently, but I believe that we're kind of some uncharted territory. I think that it's finally come for us. Year 2 looks a lot better. Seeing pretty good cash flow and profit margins. I think one of the things that's going to help us tremendously is our tasting room. That's a neat little loophole we have in Florida. Florida's got some crazy laws. And it used to be you were either a brew pub or a craft brewery or a brewery, all sold off-premise or all sold on-premise, of course. But we have this silly little loophole that's been discovered that if you claim yourself to be a tourist destination, remember Florida's a tourist spot, that if you claim yourself to be a tourist destination, you can have a tasting room and enjoy the retail sales of that. I'm expecting tasting room, I'm expecting, will carry a lot of the bills of the brewery and help us get into the black much quicker. The annual gross profit does not include the labor and the people, you know, the bartenders and such managing it. So again, this is kind of a brief overview of my plan. Well, I'm done.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. So we'll move into the Q&A section, and I wanted to kick it off and address all three of you and ask, with how narrow your margins are currently, what actions do you take to ensure you have enough cash in the bank to pay all your bills? Because we know cash is king.
Well, I've got some generous padding in my numbers, and they aren't reflected in what you guys just saw, but the old engineering credo is going to cost twice as much. I don't have twice as much built into my numbers, but I've got 25 to 40% built in.
I would say honestly, you know, man, actually physically hold your checkbook. I really mean that. You really need to be the person who looks at your numbers at least on a weekly basis, if not on a bi-weekly basis, to make sure that you're constantly looking at your cash flow. It's a total drag. It's not fun. No one considers it part of brewing, but I don't think this is a secret. We're running businesses. So how do you control it? God, pay attention all the time. And keep receipts. Jesus, keep receipts.
That's a good question, Audra, because we run a pretty tight budget. We were not that well financed going into it, from if you recall the numbers I put up on the screen. But the thing that we try to do is one is Van's great. Keep an eye on what your balance is, what your check balance is, and what you're doing and what you're purchasing. What are you spending your money at? What are you giving in donations? These little things, nickels and dimes, they start adding up pretty fast. What we try to do is we try to buy our grain at 10,000-pound quantities to get price breaks. We buy our bottles the same way, 10,000 at a time to get better freight rates. But those are big chunks, big checks to pay. You'll find, I think, maybe due to attrition over the years of small brewers, you're not extended a lot of credit out there. People want to usually up front. And if you got a credit card, you're putting things on. Those bills come around once a month, and they got to be paid. And so if you're going to stay in the black, you've got to watch those things very, very closely. Again, if you think you got enough cash, if you can double it, that certainly is going to help for one thing. But that's not always the case. Doing things judiciously and working to stay ahead of the expenses that you're creating as you go. You know, I thought I was going to come out and make all the beer I wanted to, and it was just going to sell in the Oregon market. Well, that was a little bit of a rude awakening, because even though we've got what I think is a very good product and it's well received, there's only so many retailers and there's only so many people buying 750-mil bottles. So that quickly got us moving into California, as I mentioned, to get more sales, and that's what we had to get our volume up. We knew that 300-barrel level was not going to let us survive any which way, and that 1,000-barrel mark is something that we've got to strive for. So to answer your question, Otter, the one thing that we can do as members of a cooperative, we can reduce our distributions. We can take less money and less in our pockets month to month, and that's a little bit of a buffer that we've got in order to hopefully survive.
All right. Thank you for your responses. Ms. Aaron back there has the microphone, so any other questions, we'd be happy to address them.
We did so good.
We answered all the questions.
For the brewery and planning in Florida, you mentioned a tasting room, which nobody else did. What percentage of your production do you think you're going to sell through your tasting room?
I missed the last part of that.
Percentage of your production do you think you're going to sell through your tasting room?
You know, I don't have that to a T, but I know that it's going to be a very small percent of our production, but enjoying retail markup for that is going to be pretty significant to the dollar income.
I think if you looked at look at the numbers that were put up there, that if you use those ratios of how many pints you were and growlers you were going to send out the tasting room versus how many barrels you were going to produce overall, you could probably kind of figure that number out.
Yeah, I could if I had a calculator and a pen.
Other valuable tools in a brewery.
I should mention that we're technically going to have a tap room as well. We're estimating that we'll probably do about 10% we'll probably do about maybe 100 barrels a year out of the tap room. You know, where I used to work, it was pretty normal for us to get about $700 or $800 a barrel in revenue over the bar. I think we'll do that. We're not, you know, getting $800 a barrel when you're only selling 100 barrels a week is pretty easy. Your staff just stands there and watches the beer pour into the glass, you know, as opposed to at a busy bar where they're, you know, acting like bartenders actually. But if you can sell it at retail, obviously do it, you know. Besides, you know, the other thing is, like I said, you know, we don't sell beer. We sell a relationship, right? What's the best way for people to understand that relationship? Come to the brewery, drink the beer, meet me, you know? So.
I just did some country boy math here. It looks like Looks like we're selling about a barrel a day, and it's times 6 days a week. That's six barrels a week times 50, 300 barrels. So it's a small portion of our sales, but again, I think the revenue generated from it is going to be significantly more than those 300 barrels represent.
When you guys do costing for raw materials, does that include things like CO2, chemicals, other consumables, things like that?
Yes.
Yeah, the question is, does that include all components, chemicals for cleaning and CO2? Yeah, we put all those in as far as the ingredient cost on ours, too. Yeah, it's because that adds up as well. You start seeing that CO2 bill. We don't even use CO2, and we bottle condition, and we have a big CO2 bill. So just purging tanks and things like that, little things add up. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, another, we don't really talk about this, but chemical usage is a huge area in which you can save money. You know, it sounds totally ridiculous, but I worked for Rock Bottom for 16 years. I was a regional brewer. One of our jobs, ridiculously enough, was to go around to other breweries and make sure that our brewers had a measuring device for their chemicals. And I'm not saying the Rock Bottom brewers are bad. I think they're actually good. But you go around to breweries and you'll be shocked how many, like, oh, I use 3 coffee cups. That's normal in small brewing. Stop it. Measure it. Do your job.
Reuse your caustic. Have a caustic tank that's you can dose up and measure what the pH is on it, so you know you have the cleaning efficiency that you need, and being able to use it as long as the life will allow. Those things, little things like that, instead of just dumping it and make fresh. And, yeah, measure it instead of, oh, about that much, maybe a little more. Yeah, well, yeah, those, it's measuring all along the way, I think, as well.
So I...
Good question. Questions about buying bulk, especially in grain. We use bagged grain, whole bagged grain, and we mill it right as we mash in. We handle our grain very carefully to keep it as fresh as possible. And again, buy it so we can keep it fresh as well. I talked to some maltsters, a couple of different ones, and they felt that it's somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 barrels to justify a malt silo.
I mean... Well, it depends on how big your beers are. But, I mean, the general rule for a silo is 90 days. You know, you want to move your grain in and out of the silo in 90 days, right? Now, there's a lot of places that stretch that. There's a lot of them. Is it absolutely the best thing to do? Probably not. Is it doable? Yeah, absolutely it is. We're the same thing. We're bag malt. We're going to stick with bag malt until we can move to totes or super sacks. The reason for that's really simple. Because we're planning on making a lot of different styles of beer, we want to be able to change out our base malt really easily. So a tote allows us to buy in bulk, but change. So, you know, there's some other grain handling options out there for savings, but always buy everything by the pallet.
Just buying enough in the price range.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah, why wouldn't you? You know what I mean?
And my plan was based on the super sacks as well for our base malt. And Florida... 60 days in a silo.
So I have a question about bottles, and it sounds like you're all using large bottles. From what I've seen in the stores, the cost that you can get from a 12-ounce is not like what you can get for the 750 or 22. Is there a perception as far as premium depending on the 750 compared to the 22?
You say, is the question, is there a perception upon the quality being in a 750 or a 22? I don't know the answer to that for sure, but I know that our on-premise, it really suffers because we're in a 750. You just, even though you can pour a 750 and make 3 8-ounce pours out of it, that just doesn't work in the mindset for on-premise. And so... That's why they want draft, for whatever reason it is. But the other option that we have and that we're looking at later on this year is probably going into either 330s or 375 ml bottles. And that's what on-premise want. They want the single service bottle, and that 375 qualifies for that. And that's what we're going to look at.
I mean, I would say that the consumer perceives smaller package, 12-ounce, as what I call drinking beer. You know, you sit around with your friends on the porch, just, hey, can I have a beer? Yeah, great. Larger format is special occasion purchases. You know, that special occasion may be, you know, weekends are made for Michelob, but it's a special occasion nonetheless. You know what I mean? And special occasion justifies higher price point. Right? So.
How often do we have to pay tax? For Oregon, we have to pay our state sales tax of $2.60 a barrel that's sold in state, and that's a monthly report. And since we're small, less than I don't know how many barrels, the federal excise tax of $7.60 a barrel, seven a barrel, is paid quarterly. So the reports only have to go out quarterly for that, monthly on the state. And I don't know how it is in Florida, Tom.
We have the sales tax, but not what is your
excise tax, the per barrel tax?
No, we don't have that.
You don't have that in Florida. Yeah. You don't have that in Florida. So you're just a federal,
right.
And that would be quarterly reporting. Yeah.
Yeah, those of you that just recently raised capital from outside investors, what can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. What exit strategies were you talking about, as well as what type of returns to your investors were you discussing?
Well, that was that's actually one of the sticking points in my plan, is investors always are looking for an exit strategy, and I think we all know craft breweries really don't have much of an exit strategy. I'm trying to pitch it on long-term dividends.
I could add something that doesn't pertain to our brewery, but there's another brewery in town that I happen to invest in as well. And they had a good plan, I thought, because what they did was they were selling, I think it was $10,000 pieces of investment. $5,000 of that was being a loan that was scheduled to pay off over within 5 years or less, I think, with interest. So right away, if you're going to get a return on your investment of that half of your investment plus interest, it came out to around $8,700 or something like that, that you were going to get paid back on your $10,000 investment, and then you still retain that other $5,000 of your investment long term if the brewery does really good over the years. And so that, I think, made it a lot more comfortable for people to pony up and invest, because they saw something coming back in a relatively short term. Because otherwise, most small breweries, I don't think we're going to guarantee you a return on your investment of this amount. That's, you just can't do that. So this was the way it was structured in order to give that little bit of latitude. And
yeah, those guys are friends of ours, and we totally copied them. It's actually how we funded our brewery. So we did that. What we did was we offered exactly the same thing, $10,000 chunks, $5,000 isn't a loan. We offered 7.5% for 8 years. And since it's a private party loan, you can structure the payments any way you want. So ours was, you get nothing the first year. You get interest only in years 2 and 3, and then in the rest of the years, you get your principal and interest back. So that's good for us from a cash flow point of view. It gives them some, and at 7.5%, they were like, I mean, if you guys have seen interest rates out there, that are a joke. So a lot of people were like, man, this is a better thing that I can put my money into than almost everything else. And then the rest of the money, that's their equity position. For us, at least, like I said, we don't plan on getting very large. We plan on maybe making 4,000 barrels of beer. Breweries eat capital at an exorbitant rate. In order to keep getting bigger, you keep needing to take loans. We're all friends with the guys at Ninkasi, and I'm not telling any secrets here. But, you know, those guys apply for a loan, and when they get the loan, they've spent the money already, and they apply for another one because they're growing so fast, you know? For us, if we just try to be us little kooky brewer guys, then once we're no longer buying tanks and equipment because we're out of capacity, I can pay back my investors. I can give them a disbursement off of our profit, right? And they're my friends, and they're my family and stuff. These are really not people I want to screw, you know? So,
there's a trust. It's a lot of it. You know.
Question?
The question was why we chose to be a cooperative instead of another business model. And the reason for that was that, number one, I didn't want to have employees. We wanted to stay small. And by operating as a cooperative, the original intent was that we would all be able to just work hard and just take what profits we could get and not guarantee distributions. Unfortunately, one of our partners wasn't in a position to do that, and so, well, if we have to raise it up for him, we're going to raise it for everybody. So with that, we do have that larger, $11,000 a month expense that's fixed and built into it. So we do it that way and continue the model because if we have to put extra hours in, whether we're producing one case or 1,000 cases, we're going to get the job done. And we're fortunate enough that we have three other partners that can pitch in and help out because they know that's going to go to a distribution eventually as well. And we also, there's this where we live at, and I think most places, that you've got a lot of friends that work for beer. And so you can get by with the thinness that you have in your staffing with a little bit of flexibility. And the other thing is in the States anyway, we will be taxed at our normal rate rather than at a corporate rate, so each individual has their own tax rate, which should bring that overall taxes down, more money in our own pockets instead of going to the government.
All right, our time is up.
Thanks for coming. Good luck. Live the dream.
Thank you, David, Ben, and Tom, for coming out. Thank you all for attending the session. Cheers.
Thanks, Audra.